Men on television used to reflect traditional masculinity, reinforcing a man's role as the breadwinner, uninvolved in his children's lives. But our guest author says that's changed in the 21st century. We'll talk about how and why this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk about how men are depicted on television with the author of Cable Guys. And we'll welcome your thoughts. How do you think men are depicted on TV these days? And we're talking 21st century, not last century. Doesn't that sound weird? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Do you like the way men are portrayed on television? Do you think the portrayals are accurate? Let me welcome our guest, very happy to have with us, Amanda Lotz, Associate Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Michigan. She is the author of several books about television, most recently, Cable Guys, Television and Masculinities in the 21st Century. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
You know, I've seen a lot written about women and how they are portrayed in television shows, but not so much the guys. Why did you decide to look into this?
Well, I think for me, it started as I was finishing up a project about women in the late 1990s and early 2000s. And I just started seeing shows that I wasn't watching because I was working on them. It was just sort of my regular viewing. And it struck me that something different seemed to be happening with these men. I couldn't put my finger on it at first, and something just seemed different. And then when I went to look at the literature, which is sort of the academic pursuit, well, what have other people said? I realized exactly that there was very little scholarship about men on television, really, in any time period, which is fascinating given that men have been the foremost gender throughout television history. Much of the work on women, it's always, you know, talking about something new and how women are changing and emerging and not being, you know, underrepresented or stereotyped anymore. And so it was in that sort of matrix of concerns that sort of led me to keep digging at this project until I figured out at least one way to take a look at this issue of men on television.
Well, I do remember doing a show, and it was in the last century. It was, I don't know, 1990s or something. There were at least some men's advocacy groups who were upset with the way they thought men were being portrayed on television as being, you know, dopes and dullards and goofballs and not, they thought, a very favorable or accurate portrayal. That was last century.
Yes, and I would say that some of that persists, because the book that I've worked on here focuses on men in drama. And so I'd say that stereotype that you're referencing does persist. If we look back in television history, it's actually fairly cyclical. Every 10, 20 years or so, that kind of father as buffoon character reaffirms. But I think the thing that's always important when understanding men on television is that throughout history, men have always been portrayed in a lot of different ways. And so even if you did have those sort of more buffoonish characters, you know, someone like Homer Simpson is sort of the classic example of the last couple decades, that was not ever the only way that men were seen. And it would be difficult to say that would ever be even the dominant way that men might be seen.
Yeah. So how were men portrayed in drama, if that's what kind of what you know, in the past? How is it different today than it was in the past?
One of the big differences is that we now see the whole life of men in a lot of dramas, certainly not all dramas. And here I'm talking about, I didn't set out to write a book about cable. It just sort of, as I was sorting out the storytelling that I found particularly compelling, or those shows that I thought were really doing something different, it ended up that they all were on cable. And so it's certainly the case that what I'm about to talk about continues on broadcast. But historically, we've seen men either relegated to one of two roles. And in the drama, it's almost always men as workers. And so they were the detectives, they're the doctors, And certainly part of their characterization might be that they had children that we never really saw or wives that we never really saw. But historically, men have we've seen them as workers and not as family members. And the set of shows that I'm looking at here that emerges really, I think The Sopranos in the late 1990s was the beginning of this trend. You see the whole life of a male character. And in many ways, you know, if you were to say, what is the show about? The show is really about this man and his struggle with his life, whether it's his home life, and we see him engaging with family and children, and we see the way that, you know, he performs his sense of self there. We also see him in his professional space, whether he's a cop in the case of something like The Shield, or a mob boss in The Sopranos, and we see the kind of struggles that he faces there, and even the way he might be different at work than he is at home. And so one of the big differences of the shows that I'm looking at in the book is this notion that they show the whole life of a man.
Yeah. So you said that's one way that they are different. There are other ways?
I think the other thing that I then trace out throughout the book is the way notions of masculinity are changing. And so all of these shows place a great deal of emphasis on family and the importance of that family. And if we think about dramatic arcs, you know, the things that compel a story moving forward, in all of these stories, these men, whether they are making meth or whether they are teachers who produce or go off in second careers as gigolos, or they are rogue police officers that are increasingly doing illegal things, we see that they are doing these illegal things, ironically, in an effort to provide for or restore their families. And so that was also something that really struck me, because historically, narratives about women have, you know, very much centralized the importance of motherhood and family. And that just hadn't been something connected to male characters nearly so much. And so this prevalence of this story about men struggling with how to be fathers, how to be men, or the men that, you know, different people, whether it was the people at work or their wives and their children, the men that they were expected to be, it just kept appearing again and again throughout these cable dramas.
So why do you credit feminism with this change?
That's a good question. Part of it sort of traces back to, as I was looking for, you know, where did this come from, and trying to posit, you know, possibilities. And feminism, I think a lot of people, you know, sort of think about feminism as this movement that happened, it's over. And, you know, social change is really a long and complicated process. And even those of us who study it don't really have great ways to think about or talk about those changes that take place many years later. But when I was looking at sort of the demographics of these characters, I came to realize that really most all of them were men who were, who, if they were real men, would belong to what is often referred to as Generation X, sort of that group that was born from about the mid-1960s through the mid to late 1970s. And as a generational cohort then, you know, this was the first generation that grew up with changing gender norms and expectations. So it's not like we can say, you know, feminism changed everything in 1968 or 1972. We can have these different mileposts when laws were passed or different changes started. But it struck me that one way to think about this is that it really takes a complete generation being raised in a new environment or an environment that is negotiating new norms in order to really bring to bear those norms. And so it seemed to me that given the generational, the age of these characters, that the best way to explain the difference in the men was that these are men that grew up in the era, the first era of a changed gender space that was largely owed to the efforts of second wave feminism.
Therefore, we are seeing them portrayed as full individuals with families and wives, and we know about their lives. And in the past, we just see them, whatever, going to the bank.
Well, I think it's the fact that this acknowledgement that feminism didn't only change gender scripts for women, but that, you know, in each of these families we have, or in most of the families, you have two working adults. And you know, that's certainly something that feminism enabled as a norm. The fact that there are two working adults is not a point of conflict in the sense that, you know, there's no, these stories are never about, you know, how a woman should stay home and how these male characters really think that that's a woman's place. But instead they are characters who are trying to deal with the complexity of trying to, make it in sort of a middle-class life in the U.S., even with these two, working parents, I think that the changed gender norms within the family space that came along with it. So, you know, these are male characters who aren't in charge of everything. The stories consistently show that, you know, when the men kind of try to take on everything instead of sharing things with their capable female partners, that's when things begin to fall apart. And so I think the kind of relationships and the kind of marriages that we're seeing are a result of the changes that were produced by second wave feminism.
But they still want to, or the TV shows are showing them still struggling to be the good breadwinner, aren't they?
Very much so. And I think that's what a variety, stepping outside of TV now, even some sociological research that's been published in the last couple years is saying, is something that's emerging in satisfaction surveys of real men, that there's this real conundrum. Some have called it the new male mystique. But this idea that, you know, sort of men are struggling with the fact that there are new expectations on men, that they are expected to be engaged parents in a way that maybe they weren't 30 years ago, that they are expected to be partners in their marriages, and that there are all these new demands, whether it's, you know, being present for soccer games and field trips and things like that. But at the same time, our work expectations of men really haven't changed. And so men still feel tremendous pressure, even though, you know, this might not come from anywhere clearly, that there might not be this constant discourse of you must be the breadwinner, but men still feel that. And so whereas for women, sort of the work-family balance, you know, there hasn't been a big change in women's satisfaction or their struggle with that over time, whereas for men, the Work-Family Institute, who does these surveys, is seeing far more pronounced stress being expressed by men, much more now on par with that faced by women. This discourse of, you know, needing to have it all and do it all is now not only stressing women but also stressing men too.
Well, we'll get some specific examples and talk about some specific TV characters as we move along. We are talking about how masculinity is being portrayed on television these days. We are talking with the author of Cable Guys, Television and Masculinities in the 21st Century. Amanda Lotz is an associate professor of communication studies at the University of Michigan. We welcome your questions for her. We welcome your observations. How do you think men are portrayed on television? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. That's the theme for Breaking Bad, one of the shows that our guest examined as she researched how men are portrayed on television, cable television in particular. She is the author of Cable Guys, Television and Masculinities in the 21st Century. She says that that the way men have been portrayed on television has changed in recent decades as feminism's influence on men in the real world is reflected in the men now seen on TV. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page if you have a question or an observation for Amanda Lotz, author of Cable Guys, Television and Masculinities in the 21st Century. Well, let's take a listen to a clip from Breaking Bad.
What does a man do, Walter? A man provides for his family.
This costs me my family.
When you have children, you always have family. They will always be your priority, your responsibility. And a man provides. And he does it even when he's not appreciated or respected or even loved. He simply bears up, and he does it because he's a man.
Well, even if it means becoming a meth dealer, as the character Walter White did, Amanda?
Yeah, well, that scene takes place, I think, in an important place in the trajectory of that show. That's really, you know, Walt is trying to get out at that moment, and this is the talk that pulls him back in and arguably pulls him in deeper than he'd ever been. And so there was a way up until that moment where I think the viewer was set up to forgive Walt in different ways. We saw that, you know, he was struggling in the situation of being a high school chemistry teacher with what seemed to be terminal lung cancer and not enough money to provide for his family, not enough money to cover his cancer treatments. And so that was the original explanation for his pursuit of the meth trade. But at this moment, his cancer's in remission, and he has earned the money that the nest egg that he was after. And it's this moment that the narrative really begins to turn, and Walt begins an even longer, darker journey, I think, into the kingpin that he tries to become.
Yeah. And how is this reflective of your theory that feminism, played a role in the way men are depicted on TV?
Well, I think we have to back up a little bit and take a look at, you know, and certainly not saying that feminism is what leads men to these illegal routes, but rather feminism contributes to changing society in certain ways. And we definitely see that in the marital dynamic between Walt and Skylar White. This is a relationship as it starts out. I think Walt's in a difficult place. He's certainly he loves his family very much, but he's, you know, finds he doesn't make a lot of choices in his own life. He's kind of just sort of unreflexively skating through life when this cancer sort of necessitates that he look at his accomplishments in different ways. And it is initially his choice, one that he keeps quite secret, to begin cooking meth. And he even keeps his diagnosis from his wife for quite a while. And we see, you know, sort of the way in which he feels driven, even much before this speech, that he's failed his family in some way by, you know, putting them in this situation where he might die and they wouldn't have means to care for themselves. And so, but he never talks to his wife about that and never sort of talks about that in terms of the struggles that they both face, trying to balance work and family.
And there are other examples of these, I don't know, dark characters like Walter White on some of the cable shows?
Yes, there are. In many ways, HBO series called Hung is very similar in the telling of a tale, again, about a male high school professor or high school teacher. In this case, it's a character that we know pretty well from our history in terms of this character was that all-star sports star, you know, kind of the homecoming king, right? And that was all the pre-story. And usually when we tell the narrative about that character, it kind of ends at that moment. Well, this is one that picks up, you know, 20 years later when his knees have failed him and the major league baseball career he thought he was going to have is gone, and he's returned home to small town Michigan, where he's coaching and teaching, and the high school sweetheart that he had in those glory days has left him, and that's how we find this character who, because he had not paid his not been able to or not paid his home insurance bill when his house burns down, the house that he'd inherited from his parents, so it was his childhood home, he finds himself without means to rebuild. And so this, along with sort of other personal crises, lead him to search out a backup career and or a way to augment his finances, and he decides on male prostitution. And so in that story, which is, I think, much more comical than Breaking Bad, and it's also, in some ways, I think it's easier to sort of see these gender tensions, because in Hung there is a voiceover, so you often hear the character, you know, sort of narrating his feelings, whereas in Breaking Bad you really have to watch close to try to make sense of Walter White's motivations at times. And that character you hear very much expressing a sort of frustration with the possibilities for men in contemporary society.
Talk a little bit about, you know, I have to admit I haven't been able to watch many of these shows. I don't watch a lot of primetime TV because I'm sleeping. But Dexter, isn't that about a serial killer?
It is.
Yeah. So what's what's with that?
So Dexter, there's sort of two shows that I look at somewhat in parallel that fit the general thematic of the other male-centered serials. In terms of, you know, Dexter, like these others, you see a multidimensional portrayal. You see this character at home, and you also see him at work. He works as a forensics analyst. And you get, in that case, again, quite a bit of interiority. And you hear Dexter also has a monologue, and so you as the audience get a sense of how he's seeing things. I think what's one of the interesting things about the way that show is written is you get Dexter's perspective that way, but you as the viewer often have more information, and so you sort of even recognize some of the fallacy of how he perceives things. And again, so I think Dexter works a little bit differently than some of these other shows. You know, as you note, its central conceit is this story about this character who is a serial killer. Dexter's backstory is that his mother was murdered in a gruesome, awful way, and a police officer, you know, finds him and adopts him. And comes to believe, we learn in the final season with the aid of a psychiatrist, that Dexter's really been so damaged by this early life experience that there's a fascination with killing that can't be contained. In the story, Dexter calls it his dark passenger. And so his father, Harry, kind of, in quotes, I'd say, rehabilitates him by teaching him what is called Harry's code, which is how to kill people and not get caught. But the thing of Harry's code is that you can only kill people, basically, who are very awful and have escaped the proper action of the justice system. And so Dexter's a serial killer in a very particular context. But you see, with Dexter, whereas most of the men in the other series are struggling with how to be men, sort of in a general, like, what is expected of men in our society at this time, in the early seasons, Dexter's really struggling with whether or not he's human. He feels very distant and alienated from people. He doesn't understand people. And over the course of the series, that improves somewhat. Comes to be written in a different way.
Well, we will get to some more examples of perhaps different ways men are portrayed on TV these days. But continue to welcome any observations you have, or whether or not you think that men are depicted fairly or not, and why or why not, unfavorably, favorably, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Amanda Lotz, who is the author of Cable Guys, Television and Masculinities in the 21st Century. Jess in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Jess.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm good. What do you think?
Well, I'm 46 years old. I'm going through a divorce. We have 6 children together, and I have the children. If it wasn't for the fact that I was raised in a single-parent home by my mother, plus I was raised at a time when we were watching Big Valley, Bonanza, and the person I kind of adopted, if you saw, as a pseudo-father, the persona of John Wayne via the movies, I wouldn't be the man I am today, and I wouldn't be able to handle the situation that I am. I have community help and God's help as well, so don't get me wrong. But today's men are portrayed to extremes, and you've given many examples of criminals or criminal behavior, or they're described and portrayed as weak men, as lesser than or wishy-washy or what have you. Most people, if they were today's men, if you will, put in my situation, wouldn't be able to handle it. And it's because they haven't gone through, everything's been made easy and convenient versus having to learn through or experience.
Yeah. All right, so they're portrayed, Jess thinks, as, bad boys or buffoons or, weaklings. First off, is his impression, does that jive with yours, Amanda?
Yes, I think the contemporary television space, it's really hard to sort of say anything about men on television broadly because you have, let's say, very different kinds of masculinity that come out, let's say, in reality shows, often in the kind of competitive environment that you see there. Right now, or in the last, and at the same time as the stories that I was writing about, the big trend in reality drama was very much shows like Ice Road Truckers and Axe Fellers and Deadliest Catch and sort of these shows depicting men in very conventionally masculine jobs. Often these are jobs that are reliant on physical capability, and there's very few women involved at all. So the fact that those shows were popular, at the same time you have these cable dramas that are with the themes that I'm talking about, and then on broadcast, you still have other things. On broadcast, you tended to have more, you have men still mainly portrayed in their professional roles and often in kind of upper middle class professional roles. So the doctors, lawyers, detectives, often people who you don't see struggling with money. One of the things that was really interesting to me of the cable shows is that there was this centrality of a struggle with financial stability, which is something that isn't common in broadcast series. So, I think there's certainly a lot of different things out there these days. I'm trying to think of places where one might see fatherhood in a less complicated way, and even a network drama like Parenthood might be more reflective of the shows of old that the caller references, or Last Man Standing, which is Tim Allen's return to television fatherhood on ABC these days. But I think it's important to sort of talk about the way that why these kind of shows are important. And it's not necessarily, it's not about, any idea that men would emulate this, right? We're not setting up Walter White as a role model in any way. But what's interesting is that there are so many of these shows struggling with presenting characters struggling with these same problems and thinking about what that tells us about where we are in society. And so I think the reason why we don't see the kind of narrative from the 50s and 60s, the Big Valley and things like that, that's largely has to do with the way that the television industry has changed. In that era, we had 3 broadcast networks. They were broadcast networks, which meant that they were beholden to the FCC to provide a certain set, to operate under a certain number of regulations in terms of what kind of content could be on the air. But moreover, as businesses, they had to pull in 40% of the nation to even be basically successful. And what happens now, what happens really beginning in the 80s with cable network starting, but definitely as we get to the 2000s when cable starts doing a lot of original programming, is that the audience is fractured. And you have many different kinds of shows appealing to many different kinds of audiences. And what has really gone away is this moment of programming that's trying to appeal to, let's say, one family or all members of a family watching TV around one set, and whether that's, you know, 10-year-old Jimmy and, you know, maybe grandma's watching too. The kind of programming that was developed when that was the way people mostly watched is very different than what is competitive and what is likely to succeed in the current era.
Yeah. You addressed it somewhat, but I think our caller was also saying, hey, I'm going to assume to be single dad. Mm-hmm. And I don't see myself on television anymore. It's either, you know, two extremes. I mean, you say that there are a couple of network shows that might show a single dad taking care of his family, but for the most part, it's being presented in a much more dramatic way on cable television.
Well, I think that's reflective of my viewing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I am not sure of what the range of single parent shows that are on these days. There's nothing that sort of comes to mind as being highly, very, very popular.
Yeah, we are. Well, let's take another call. I was going to move on to another area, but Carrie in Cedarburg has been waiting. Hi, Carrie.
Hello, Joy. How are you?
Good. What do you think?
I was just mentioning the show The Walking Dead, which is usually not a show that I would ever watch because I don't like creepy things, but you get sucked in by the story of this man who's the sheriff and his family and what they're going through. And it does seem actually very plausible, other than the zombies, that this could be, you know, a man living today. He's dealing with some really complex, heartbreaking choices and things going on around him that he has no control over. And I just kind of wanted to get her take on, you know, does she find him to be realistic?
It's a great question. And I think Walking Dead matches up nicely with Sons of Anarchy, which is an FX drama about a California motorcycle club. And I really would never have guessed that I would fall in love with a show about a biking club myself either, but found, you know, these settings, whether it is, again, the zombies or the motorcycles, they can provide really rich narratives. And one of the things when I'm watching Sons of Anarchy more as a fan than as a scholar, it's really high melodrama. And if we pull apart the bits and pieces of the story, it's often sort of these themes that in another era would have been told through what we call, you know, soap opera. But it's intense family dynamics about, people's secrets that are held in families and, who's managing that information and who knows what when. And so I think, you know, the fact that they're zombies does not exclude Walking Dead. I don't look at it in the book. It started running once I had started writing. And it wasn't always clear to me whether we were going to... They, like Sons of Anarchy, Walking Dead kills people off somewhat unpredictably. And so it was... You're never sure whether your lead character is going to be with you. So I think what you say speaks to the breadth of the phenomenon and how Walking Dead most certainly could be considered to be part of this discussion.
We are talking about how the depiction of men on television has changed in recent decades and why it's changed. And we're welcoming your questions and we're welcoming your own reviews. How do you think men are depicted on TV? Do you think it's favorable, unfavorable? What societal forces are at play? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Amanda Lotz, who is an associate professor of communication studies at the University of Michigan and the author of several books about television, most recently Cable Guys, Television and Masculinities in the 21st Century.
Tech! late. I gotta go.
Let's go!
It's guy love, don't compromise. The feeling of some other guy holding up your heart into the sky. I'll be there to care through all the lows. I'll be there to share the high. It's guy love between two guys.
You smell like prison.
When was the last time you guys saw each other?
This morning, we carpooled. But we haven't worked together in over a year. You know what I'd like to do now?
Is it go to Vermont and make this thing legal?
Talk to the hand. Remember that?
That's from the TV show Scrubs, where best friends Turk and JD reunite dramatically. I'll say dramatically. They're running toward each other with their arms out, like, you know, ready to hug as that guy love song was going on. That's quite a different portrayal of men and masculinity on TV than, you know, say, Breaking Bad. What's you talk about male friendship is different, is portrayed differently in the 21st century than it was in the past, too?
Yeah. So, yeah, there are many different facets of masculinity that are interesting in the contemporary era. And so part of organizing a conversation about it is that I have a couple chapters where I'm looking at the male-centered dramas like Breaking Bad, and then a chapter looking, as you play, about male friendship particularly, because at the same time as these serial dramas that are pretty much all about straight white men are on the air, there are also these other interesting phenomena emerging, and at least four shows at the time that were really working with stories about male friendships that seemed to be pretty different from the kind of friendships in the past, fitting very much in with the word that emerged in the early 2000s, the bromance of male, real intimacy in male friendship, straight male friendship.
Yeah, and the Turk and why is that different today than it was just in the last century?
Right. So I think sort of the language that someone who studies media like myself would use is we think about media not so much as good and bad, but thinking about the kind of scripts, the different ways to be a man, let's say, in this conversation, that are repeated again and again through media, sort of with the idea that seeing that script again and again and again and again makes you think that this is how you're supposed to behave. You know, seeing it just once isn't going to make you that way, but it's in the predominance. And so what I found interesting about these, the shows about male friendship, was really that a level of intimacy was being present in these shows, that you had men. It's not just that they were, the shows that I look at in this chapter particularly are Boston Legal, Scrubs, Psych, and Nip Tuck. And in these shows, it's not just that the characters are friends. Let's say, like, Joey and Chandler were friends. But in these shows, the relationship, the friendship is a narrative thing. It's something that gets talked about in the show. It's often a problematic. There's a series of episodes between Turk and JD where, you know, JD feels like Turk doesn't have time for him anymore. And this is an ongoing thing, and they talk about it in the same way that in a lot of these cases, the dialogue is similar to what we would have seen historically in terms of relationship negotiation between a man and a woman. And so thinking about the idea that men would, in these shows, be seeing, you know, that there are other ways for men to be friends that are more intimate, and kind of the importance of that.
Let's go to Pete in Reedfield. Hi, Pete.
Hi. I'm going to take it off speakerphone here, if I may. I'm wondering, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
I am wondering whether or not, and I don't know if this is switching gears, but whether or not paternalism is kind of a biological anachronism, and that a lot of the depictions of males are just being more honest about how simple we are.
Well, what about that, Amanda?
Well, I'm not going to suggest in any way that men are simple. You know, I think what I see happening in media is that historically there have been fewer ways that have been supported by the society to, again, in quotes, to be a man. That historically the protagonist or the behavior that for men that was suggested as heroic was much more narrow than it is now. And now there are multiple ways that a society sees and can affirm for a man to be. And so, I mean, you use the word paternalism, and I think the word that I use in the book is this question of patriarchal as that old way, and patriarchy as being a notion of men's superiority and men's dominance. And what I think was particularly challenging for men within that patriarchal environment was that certain ways of being men were more valorized and had more social power. And I think the fracturing of that, you know, the erosion of patriarchy has been important for men and women, but also for men in terms of enabling different ways to be successful, to be seen as a good role model. And so, I wouldn't say that they're simple, but I do think that some of that sense that there's only one way to be a man has been eroding.
Thank you very much, Pete, for the call. You do note in the book that on television, very few men are gay. What does this say about society?
Well, it's the curious case, I think, of the cable dramas that there's so little depiction of anything outside of hetero relationships and hetero characters. So much so, I mean, certainly television has embraced gay lifestyle, gay people in its storytelling over the last decade or so, and it's really conspicuously absent in those shows. And it's certainly, I'm not to excuse the absence in those cable dramas, but I think my postulation is that these shows are already struggling with masculinity in so many ways that that for a variety of reasons they just couldn't take on this question of gay identity. And that's why in those latter two chapters, the ones that look at men in all-male spaces, like in Entourage and The League, Rescue Me and Men of a Certain Age, as well as the male friendships, there in both of those kind of stories, we do see stories that are about sort of, again, men who are struggling with their identity and struggling with the way norms in society have changed, and the fact that the lines between gay and straight identity are different and shifting, and the ways, let's say, in the friendships, each of the shows handles what might be called kind of gay anxiety in really different ways. So the clip you played from Scrubs illustrates the way that show deals with it, which is by often, you know, having these very sincere moments between Turk and JD and then becoming very silly. And so the tone will often shift pretty abruptly. Whereas in Boston Legal, which I think in many ways is just an amazing depiction of male friendship between the characters, Denny Crane, played by William Shatner, and Alan, played by James Bader. You know, that's a relationship where that series ends with these two men who can express that they love each other, that they are the most important people in each other's lives, and it has nothing to do with their sexuality and who they're having sex with. They are straight men, but that, you know, that they have love for each other. And I think, you know, that the fact that a television show was sort of telling that story and opening up that space of intimacy for male relationships was really important.
Tim in Prairie Farm is with us. Hello, Tim.
Hello. Yes, I'm just thinking that relationships, when you're talking about men, has changed a lot from, for example, just the depiction of men in the Waltons program. I know that's a long way back. But I think that we lack the kind of honesty and faithfulness to each other that used to be there in relationships, and whether it's men or women or whatever it is, so that a lot of, not just in the media, but in the real world, the language people use with each other on media and phones, as well as personally, is really kind of raunchy, as well as the fact that there's flipping from one relationship to the other that's missing. And that isn't depicted so much on the television, I don't think, as it really is out there. And it isn't doesn't have that stability that it used to have.
Amanda?
No, I think that's a fine point, and I think the breadth of that statement, you know, it's not just about depictions of men. I think it. My knowledge of the Waltons is limited, but you know, just trying to think of what the closest thing contemporaneously might be. But it does seem that contemporary shows are you know, sort of they're struggling with often more complicated themes and certainly things that not all audiences find interesting. And so I think an important thing to keep in mind as well is again, how scattered the contemporary audience is versus what was the case in the days of shows like The Waltons.
So are the cable guys influencing society, or is society influencing them?
Always the $64,000 question. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things that can't, I don't think, really be known. And the way that media scholars like myself sort of approach this is that it's certainly not one way. But you know, what I see this is I see this kind of as a bubbling up as a cultural sentiment. Now, what's one of the things that's really interesting to me is the way that, you know, like a show like Girls on HBO will debut and create. We've had, you know, all of this conversation about, you know, women in culture, women in society, roles for young women, and things like that, and just the way in which that there's not much of a discussion about how men's roles have changed or are changing, or the anxiety about that, and so. Sometimes I think, you know, the storytelling might start a conversation. A lot of times the storytelling responds to a conversation. There was a book that came out a few years ago that was built on a Atlantic cover story called The End of Men. And there was a lot of cultural discussion for a little while about that the thesis of that article, which was built on data that showed that actually gender roles in American society have changed in some really profound ways. A lot of that story sort of set men and women in competition to each other. And so I think when it was discussed, it wasn't necessarily discussed in terms of men's roles changing in positive ways at all. But once that story hit, the following television season, there were a whole bunch of new comedies that were about men and masculinity. And Last Man Standing is the only of those shows that lasted more than a season. And I saw there was an interview with a television executive who said that they probably got 20 different pitches that were built on that news article. And sort of people trying to make this idea that gender scripts have changed into a story. And, you know, why did all those shows fail? You know, I think after watching the ones that made it on air, I think most of them failed just because they weren't very well creatively grounded.
Yeah, we're going to have to wrap it up because we're out of time. I want to thank you very much for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Amanda Lotz is author of Cable Guys, Television and Masculinities in the 21st Century. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Robin Cherry for producing the program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.